Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing and hunting in the great outdoors, coming to you live and in person from the spacious and futuristic studios of WCBM 680. Yes, indeed. Sitting here at the console that looks like a giant spaceship, kind of. Well, you know, from Star Trek in the 60s, but it's functional, to say the least. Brian's got the squirrel all fed, the treadmill's running, and I hope we're on the air this morning. Anyway, we're here to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Got a couple of things going on, but we will be discussing Cecil, the C6 sea serpent that was, Cecil, the C6 sea serpent this morning. What's that? Oh, he was a lot. I'm going back to my childhood. You know, you remember Beanie and Cecil. Yes, Cecil was a C6 sea serpent. And, of course, if you'd like to call in about that dead lion that's making headlines around the world, well, we'll be more than glad to talk about that. And I have a few points on that if you'd like to know. But there's a couple other things out there in the news, and some of them are a little more relevant to you and I. This is from Virginia, a fellow in Mechanicsville, a guy by the name of Charlie Horner, who's 75 years old, was killed by a catfish. Actually, he was stuck by a catfish, a sharp fin on a catfish. For those of you who are cat fishermen, Saturday or so, a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, this fellow's name is Charlie Horner, he's 75 years old. He was hosting their Fairmount Christian Church Bible School class of about 50 at their home on the Rappahannock River, and they've been doing this for about 5 years. And after taking some children out on the river, Mr. Horner stepped on the sharp spine of a catfish. And bacteria from the spike wound in his foot entered his body. And several days later, they amputated his leg, and 2 days later, he was dead. They since have identified the bacteria as Vibrio vulnificus. Vibrio. Vibrio is a bacteria that is prevalent in brackish water, including Chesapeake Bay. People whose immune system is compromised, or people with such afflictions as diabetes, can become violently ill from this bacteria, and sometimes it can lead to their death. So here's how the report goes in the Richmond Times-Dispatch by Laura Kebede, or K-B-E-D, or K-E-B-E-D-E, K-E-B-E-D-E, K-E-B-E-D-E. That is how you spell her name. The river bacteria, you'll remember that all day. The river bacteria that contributed to the death of a Mechanicsville man last week has been identified as Vibrio vulnificus, a health official said. Human cases are rare, but the health department said residents can take steps to prevent infection. The Virginia Department of Health receives a small number of reports of the bacteria each year, said Thomas Frank, F-R-A-N-C-K, the director of the Chickahominy Health District. Vibrio vulnificus occurs naturally in brackish and salt water, especially during the warmer months, including parts of the James River as it mixes with salt water from the Chesapeake Bay. Its prevalence peaks in July because the bacteria replicates faster in the warmer water. It can enter the bloodstream through open wounds or cuts or by eating contaminated shellfish. Now let me stop and say this. About 2 years ago, I was in an event and I consumed a number of raw oysters, not knowing much about Vibrio vulnificus. I consumed shellfish or raw oysters that apparently contained this bacteria, got sick that evening, the next day, and was pretty much sick for about a week. Fortunately, I had a mild case that did not hospitalize me, but it put me out of commission for a day or two. I've since learned about that people with type 2 diabetes like I have can be affected in a very serious manner. So you got to be careful if you are on diabetes medication or if you know you have diabetes, eating raw shellfish, raw oysters, that type of thing. So up to 11 cases of Vibrio vulnificus were confirmed by the Virginia Department of Health in 2014 and 8 in each of the 2 years prior. Nationwide, there are about 95 cases, 85 hospitalizations, and 35 deaths each year for Vibrio vulnificus, according to the Centers for Disease Control. So there we have a warning to all you all. If you are stuck by a fin in tidal water or salt water, Chesapeake Bay or wherever, if you do get a cut, you need to be very, very careful. If a cut occurs while you're fishing or boating, the wound should be flushed with high-pressure sterile water or saline and bandaged before seeking medical attention. So be cautious out there on the water. This is Vibrio is also found in our Chesapeake Bay, not just in Virginia. We have cases of the same disease here. But Mr. Horner's death as a result of stepping on a catfish spike, and it doesn't say if it was a side fin or a top fin, but, you know, you cat fishermen know. Just be very, very, very careful out there. Also from Virginia, I don't know why we've got so many stories from Virginia, but there's a name, Terry McAuliffe. Ring a bell to you all. Terry McAuliffe is the elixir of life. Terry McAuliffe is the governor of Virginia. And this article was also appeared in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. This is by Warren Fisk with an E on the end. This was Monday, July 27th. Maryland crabs, Maryland crab cakes, Maryland crab soup. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe says it's all a sham. You know, Maryland talks about its crabs, McAuliffe said with a chuckle during a July 21st radio interview. If anyone from Maryland is listening, I want to make this perfectly clear. All the crabs are born here in Virginia, and they end up, because of the current, being taken to Maryland. So really, they should be Virginia crabs. I'm just saying, that's what the governor said in a radio interview. The governor of Virginia. Talk about a class act. Yes, indeed. McAuliffe's office referred us to the website of the Chesapeake Bay Program, an environmental protection partnership between the federal government and five states, including Maryland, Virginia. We learned, this is a reporter now, we learned that blue crabs mate in the middle of the bay, that would be in Maryland, from May to October. This happens when the female molts and the male cradles her, injects sperm, and holds on until she's developed a new hardened shell. We call those doublers here. We are in a big peeler run right now. We're in a shed right now on the full moon where this is occurring. After their affair, the male takes off looking for new paramours, and the female migrates to the saltier waters of the lower Chesapeake Bay. Not all, of course, but according to this group. McAuliffe's office also sent us a map showing the areas of high salinity that are in Virginia near where the mouth of the bay opens into the Atlantic. All this information seemed to confirm the governor's statement, but did not specifically state that all bay crabs are born in Virginia. nor did it answer a more delicate question. Even if the crabs are born in Virginia, could it be argued that the moment of conception for many actually occurs in Maryland? So we turn to, this is a reporter, we turn to Romuald Lipkus, a professor at Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He told us that the females, half a year or so after they've mated and settled in the saltiest waters, develop sponges that carry as many as 2 million eggs. The eggs, when injected, pass through a sperm packet left by the male, become fertilized, and emerge as larvae. In other words, the moment of conception and birth, which Lipkus says is interchangeable terms in the crab world, almost always occurs in Virginia. The bottom line is that the governor is essentially correct. In drought, however, the salinity can get very high in Maryland, and it's possible for the females to give birth there. Now, Tom Miller was quoted as well. Tom Miller has been featured in the Maryland Loves Crabs magazine. He's at the University of Maryland Chesapeake Biological Lab. He said McAuliffe is basically right. There's no such thing as a Maryland-born crab in the Chesapeake Bay. Blue crabs require salinity of 26 parts per thousand to survive. You don't find that on the Maryland side. Miller said there are Maryland-born crabs, however. A comparatively small number are born outside the bay in coastal waters around Ocean City. But when people think of crabs, they think of the Chesapeake. So, here are a couple other... We'll get to the calls first. We're not going to hold a caller up just because of this guy. Well, Mark in Towson, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm all right.
But, Chris... That McAuliffe is an interesting guy. You know, it doesn't really matter where a crab is conceived or born. If it's soup, it's prepared by a Marylander in Maryland.
Right. Probably caught by a Maryland waterman.
Yeah, so what difference does it make? But with Terry McAuliffe...
All right, Hillary. At this point, what difference does it make?
Well, let's talk about Hillary for a second.
Oh, really?
If you get into how... Terry McAuliffe became such a wealthy, exceedingly wealthy man, a one percenter. There are some people who might say it was insider trading.
There are some people who might say that.
There are some people who might say that. People should look it up and judge for themselves.
Well, I agree.
Yeah. About the, so you take, judge what he says by the source. He's a real straight shooter. And so what's your opinion about the line?
Oh, you want to talk about Cecil?
Yeah.
Well, in talking to a number of people around the state, I'm falling into this court. Not all the facts are in. Investigations are going on internationally about this guy.
Oh, yeah.
The latest article that I read came from the Telegraph, which is an English newspaper or a British newspaper, that interviewed the alleged outfitter. Now, this guy reminds me of others that I know who fancy themselves to be outfitters, but they're really not. This guy was a farmer, and he lost his farm in Zimbabwe, and he got forced into the hunting business to make a living. And the story is that they dragged an elephant carcass onto a landowner's property who he knew, about 500 yards or so from this preserve, and it attracted some lions. And a female lion came by first. This is at night, by the way. A female lion came by first, and then a male lion came by second. And I'm going to assume that in a spotlight, this animal was shot, which is not illegal in Africa or in Zimbabwe, from what I can probably gather. This animal was shot at night by this alleged ethical dentist hunter. And the lion ran off. And now I'm having trouble understanding if he actually shot this animal with a bow and arrow or with a crossbow or exactly what he used, because the terms have been used interchangeably in the news media, and I've seen photos of him with a compound bow. I've not seen anything with him with a crossbow. But that being said, the animal was wounded, ran off, and they found it. They got on the trail the next day, the next morning, after it got to be daylight. That's the story from this guy's perspective. Now, of course, the news media said that they drug this animal carcass, attracting this lion. I'm guessing that they did not enter the park, but I don't know. I don't know if they went into the park and dragged this carcass, you know, through the park and laid a scent trail or whatever. I don't have any idea about that. I don't know that that's ever been made plain. But you know, this guy is receiving death threats and everything else. He's facing extradition now to Zimbabwe, and of course that's brought up the whole issue of trophy hunting. And you know, let's put it this way: there are 35,000 lions in Africa. There is a sustainability program that's been conducted by many of the governments over there, many of the conservation agencies in those countries. Recreational hunting has provided a tremendous amount of money to the conservation ethic in those countries. And one of the largest hunting organizations in the world, Safari Club International, whose logo contains a lion, has a lion program, and they deal with governments all across Africa to protect the African lion. So I was on their website, Safari Club International, SCI.org, I think is what it's called, and I have a little chart there from the government of Tanzania, and they talk about the revenue in U.S. dollars from tourist hunting between 2000 and 2011. And this is the Tanzanian Wildlife Division database. Mark, what would you guess in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years? In 12 years, the government of Tanzania received, the wildlife people in Tanzania received from foreign hunters in Tanzania. What kind of revenue do you think they might have received in 11 or 12 years?
Oh, I can't imagine.
Just a ballpark.
Well, this hunter alone allegedly spent $50,000.
Well, sure. Some of that went to the outfitter.
Yeah, some of that didn't all go to the government, but
no.
It has to be, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars.
In 12 years, the government of Tanzania, from recreational hunters, received $159 million.
Well, I'm off by an order of magnitude.
It averaged, well, in 2000 it was $9.3 million.
And
it remained around $9 million for about 5 years. And then in 2005 it jumped to $11.6 million, $12 million in 2006, $14.7 million in 2007, $19,760,000 in 2008-9, $18,444,000 in 2009-10, $21 million in 2010-11, and dropped off to $15 million in 2011-12. But over 12 years, the average is over $12 million a year, almost
13. In a country where the cost of living is not so high.
Tanzania, exactly.
That supports a lot of people.
It does. It does indeed. Mm-hmm. Now, even somebody like Forbes magazine weighed in on this, and they tried to put a chart out, and I've caught them on it. The article concludes, if you don't look at the chart, as with anything, you got to look into the details a little bit. The report provides an insight into the financial state of a hypothetical hunting company in Tanzania, finding that as little as 3% of their income goes to the local communities that support the bulk of conservation work. See how that works? 3% goes to local communities. So they published this chart. And here it is. It says local communities get very little. All right. So the operating expenses for a hunting operator, he gets 24% of the dollar, which includes food, drink, vehicle, camp maintenance, and so forth. And then it says wildlife division fees. Fees charged by Tanzania Wildlife Division. 22% of the dollar goes to the government. Now, if you go to the Safari Club International website and you read about their lion program, several years ago, organizations like Humane Society of the United States and others wanted to have the lion placed on the endangered species list. Safari Club rallied all the African nations, got statements from them, and determined that the lion is not endangered. The African lion is not endangered in Africa. There are about 35,000 animals. Now, out of those 35,000 animals each year, how many do you think are actually taken by recreational hunters?
I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't guess. I have no knowledge.
625.
Oh, wow.
Now, there is a sustainability in a couple of program in a number of these countries that actually raises and releases lions into the wild. These lions are very well maintained. They're released into the wild. They're released into these wildlife management areas. They're released into these game parks. And the goal is to sustain and maintain the population of wild lions in Africa. Now, you got to understand, of that $152 million over 12 years, just in one country, Tanzania, just in one country, this money goes to prevent poaching. It goes to offset, the hunter's dollars. When a hunter kills, let's say I have a 2-week safari and my permit, because I'm a cheap guy, I'm only going to take 10 Plains Games animals and maybe a Cape Buffalo. So I plunk down my $20,000 or $25,000 or whatever it is, and I take my antelope and I take my kudu and I take my gemsbuck and I take my sable and I take all this, okay? And all that meat goes to feed the local economy, goes to feed the, we might eat some of it in camp. We might take a backstrap out of an impala or something. But most of that meat goes to the community. Cape buffalo, elephant, hippopotamus. The community comes out, harvests the meat, takes it back to their village, and that's what they eat. Recreational hunting helps to cut down on what they call the pursuit of bush meat. Bush meat in Africa is meat that is obtained by the locals in the environment of whatever species of animals they can find to kill and eat. Okay? Whatever's easiest for them, they turn into meat. It could be anything from a monkey to an impala to a warthog to whatever it is, whatever the locals can kill with their own limited skill level to eat. The meat diet of the local tribe or community or whatever you want to call it is maintained by recreational hunting, by animals that they could know how harvest by themselves, like hippos and cape buffaloes and things like that. So am I defending recreational hunting in Africa? Absolutely I am. Absolutely I am. And I have the facts and the figures to back it up. What do you got? You specifically, but news.
Yeah,
media.
No, I know, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The editorial, you.
So.
The problem is that, as is often the case, it's not black and white. It's very nuanced.
They vary, of course.
And there's an argument to be made.
Sure.
That there's a very large net positive to come out of recreational hunting.
Well, of course there is. Of course there is.
The issue is that, unfortunately, it reminds me of Michael Vick and the fighting dogs, and I don't know any decent human being who could defend that kind of activity.
Well, of course not.
What made it so offensive was he wasn't fighting minks or rats. People have companion animals as dogs and cats.
Well, of course.
So they tend to anthropomorphize. Even their distant relatives. cat owners say, well, it's just another big cat. Well, it's not another big cat. It's a totally different animal. But people have a different emotional response.
Well, of course they do.
Well, if it's a buffalo.
Well, of course.
People are used to eating beef.
Yes.
That comes from a steer.
Yes.
So they don't anthropomorphize as much.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Because they're in our culture.
Well, when did we start that?
They feel about killing a buffalo, and they might have a very different response.
Exactly.
So it's dependent on the culture. But I find it more than interesting. I find it shocking that many of the people who are so highly offended, really upset, and I respect the sincerity of their feelings
about
killing a lion, and they say nothing about Planned Parenthood.
Good point. And at that, I think we'll let that one rest right there.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All right, Mark. Thank you, buddy.
Have a great week.
You do the same.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. There goes Mark. we have a little musical interlude here for you. And before we play that, I would like to say to you of my generation, could this be where you got your feelings on the African lion? With the advent of this music, when you watch this television show every week in your home, and one of the stars of the show was an African lion. Anybody out there named Judy? Are you named after this chimp? How about Clarence? Do we remember Clarence? Yes, the friendly, cross-eyed African male lion. Yes. Remember the double images with the camera? Made it look like you were seeing double. Feed your dogs what dogs used to feed themselves. Merrick Backcountry, the ancestral diet with grain-free, high-protein kibble and chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat. Backcountry is made in the USA for dogs who love exploring it. Merrick Backcountry, they love the wild as much as you. Hey, for great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, head to Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle, Pasadena. This is Alan Ellis for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, spray-on bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners, with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer, blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner from Catonsville Linex or Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie's new location is 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Hey, do you know that you can win cash and prizes just by going fishing? That's right. In Maryland, there are 67 species all across the state that are eligible for the Maryland Fishing Challenge. You can win cash and prizes for fishing wherever you want to fish in Maryland. There's $25,000 in guaranteed cash prizes across the state this fishing season. $6,000 in each of the three regions across Maryland. That's non-tidal, the freshwater, of course, Chesapeake Bay and all the tidal rivers, and the Atlantic. And master anglers, if you catch one angler award-sized fish in each of those divisions, that'd be three different species, you're eligible to win $2,000 in cash. Then at the grand finale, coming up here in September 13th, there's going to be $5,000 in random cash drawings given away at the Maryland Fishing Challenge finale event. So all you got to do is catch an award-sized fish, get your angler award, get your ticket to the finale, and show up. And you could win a boat, motor, and trailer, too, an exotic fishing vacation or fishing tackle packages. It's all in the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Runs now through Labor Day, and that's dnr.maryland.gov. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries for all the details in the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Just go fishing.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire.
Hi, Baltimore. This is Mark Levin, and now you can hear 3 hours of my show every weeknight at 7 on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yeah, Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean, clear to Flagtown. Come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is headed for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pig Pen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Cause we got a little convoy rocking through the night. Yeah, we got a little convoy. Ain't she a beautiful sight? Come on and join our convoy. Ain't nothing gonna get in our way. We gonna roll this trucking convoy across the USA.
All right, we're back. If you want to talk about Cecil, we'll talk about Cecil, but, you know, all the evidence isn't in. People need to hear more. I need to hear more rather than speculations and accusations. I would wait to see how this all shakes out. I'm sorry that this famous lion got killed. The circumstances seem to me to be rather murky. But, folks, the emotional, overwrought response to this, to me, has just been way over the top, quite frankly. Way over the top. I mean, we've got, you know, since Roe v. Wade, we've aborted 55 million innocent babies in this country. Now the videos are coming out about selling the aborted fetus parts. And where's the outrage? But somebody kills a lion and the world ends. There's just no interest in reality, I guess, you know. And let's talk to hey Ben, how are you?
Stan.
Hey, is this Stan?
Yeah,
he has Ben down here. I knew it was Stan when you heard the song. How you doing, buddy?
I figured you were checking on me, see if I'm awake.
I am
here. And got a good radio that left me down there to 495.
There you go. Good. What's up?
The one thing I wanted to say, I really don't see any difference in. I know the story of Cecil, but
right.
I'm not crazy about it. But I see that done with bear, and I mean I used to hunt years
sure.
ago.
Sure.
You know, I had a bad experience. I don't do it anymore.
I got it.
But you know that's a lot different than baiting a critter and just sitting in a tree stand. And waiting for him to come by, you know.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I really don't understand it. I've had uncles in the family that, you know, it went for either the fur, you know, or the head was hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
If you're gonna do it to eat, That's one thing.
Right.
If you're going to do it just to kill for a trophy, that's another.
Well, that's
I got my hands full. I just wanted to let you know I heard my music.
Yeah.
And we're still listening.
I appreciate
that. Get away from multitasking to control this big thing.
Okay. Well, you do that, and I'll comment on what you just said.
Thanks, Mr. Allen.
All right, buddy. Talk to you. Yep. See ya. Here he goes. Okay. Yes, let's take a look at this this trophy hunting, okay? There are men who are of means who love to hunt and who have the opportunity and the money to go and hunt wherever they want to hunt. Now, do they kill for why do they kill? Why do they hunt? Well, they enjoy it. Plain and simple. They enjoy it. Keep in mind, what is trophy hunting? Trophy hunting is taking mature animals, for the most part that are past the breeding age, who are surplus animals, who are not contributing to the welfare of the herd or the population. And these animals are mature, surplus animals for the most part. And if somebody wants to hunt them and make sure that the meat is used. Now, let me explain something. You and I may not think anything at all about, eating a hamburger or a piece of chicken or a crab or whatever that might be. And I hear this argument all the time. Well, if you're going to eat it, you know, it's okay to kill it. Really? Okay. Okay. That's fine. Most people don't even think about the fact that when they go and order a cheeseburger at the drive-thru or when they order a chicken dish at their favorite restaurant, you know, that was a living creature. They don't even think about it. But the people who are so involved in this, it's almost a religious thing with them that they've given this animal that God has given us to eat. I mean, if we weren't supposed to eat animals, why'd God make them out of meat? So, you know, they don't even think about the life of this animal when they go to the supermarket. They just look at the price. Oh, man, look at the price of steak. Holy moly, why are they so expensive? Look at the pork chops. Look at the bacon, you know. Nobody even thinks about that because they get their meat from the supermarket. Okay, so let's move that over to the world of the hunter. Hunter takes surplus animals. They even take animals that are overpopulated, as in management practices, to help the farmer or to, you know, to fill their freezer or to donate to the hungry. We're going to have a sponsor here shortly called Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry, who has a donation program and feeds thousands of Marylanders with thousands of pounds of meat donated through the local food banks. People benefit from recreational hunting here in Maryland. Same deal in Africa. Recreational hunters provide revenue for wildlife game management. We just had a conversation at the Wildlife Advisory Committee meeting on Wednesday about the budget for the Maryland Department of Natural Resources and what it's used for and, you know, where the money comes from. And Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry came up in the discussion. And, you know, I was talking about trophy hunting. You take an animal, you invest the money, local village, local economy gets the meat, you get to hide the head. But what do you do with that? You don't discard it. You have a taxidermist preserve that animal for you as a memory of that hunt. Tell me what is wrong with that. Tell me what the difference is between that and, I don't know, the Vince Lombardi trophy or the Stanley Cup. So what I'm saying is that the animals that are hunted for their hides, for their horns, for their antlers, for their, you know, their skins, whatever it might be, for their heads. Trophy hunting takes place. It always has, always will. And it's done now primarily in the name of conservation. And there are very, very strict guidelines in these countries for the most part. And we have this one case where a lion who was seen by how many people? A couple of hundred, a couple of thousand. I mean, we don't jump up and down when there's a fawn killed on the entrance ramp to the Beltway off of Liberty Road, like was laying there a couple of weeks ago. We don't get all upset about the life of that animal. We don't worry about what happens to these animals when Stan hits one with his truck. He doesn't even stop, you know. And so, I mean, we really got to look at this, and we really got to examine ourselves. What are we made of? And what do we want? And is it really my business? Is it really my business? I said earlier there are 35,000 lions in Africa. The recreational harvest of African lions is 625. Certainly not a dent in the population. Here in Maryland, our deer herd is about 240 to 250,000 animals. We take nearly 100,000 of those animals every year. And yet, the farmers complain that there's still far too many of them. Well, they're prolific breeders. They are 1 + 1 = 4 in Maryland. You know, one buck breeds one doe, and they produce two fawns. The deer herd has the capacity to double every single year without the control of recreational harvest. So, plus the money that it provides to our economy. So, give me an argument. Come on. Bring it on. We'll talk about trophy hunting if you want. Do I have a deer head on my wall? Yes, I do. I have 1, 2 white tails, a sika deer, and a number of racks. But you know what? All those deer were eaten. Either by me or by somebody else. I've got a deer at the taxidermist right now. I've got ducks that are mounted on my wall. Did I eat every one of them? No. But if I killed my limit and picked one for one magnificent example to put on my wall, yes, I've eaten the rest of them or shared it or, you know, whatever. So, come on. Right now I'm going to talk about Merrick Backcountry, the ancestral diet dogs go wild for. With a mix of exotic proteins and chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat, our grain-free recipes made in the USA offer the best nutrition for the dog whose appetite was never domesticated. Merrick Backcountry, they love the wild as much as you do. Do you know that summer is the time for picnics, family get-togethers, and camping trips? Summer is corn on the cob, steamed crabs, and fresh tomatoes. And summer is cold, juicy watermelons. Yes, indeed. The Schillinger family at Papa John's Farm likes to steam their crabs with the corn on the cob for a great family dinner. And if you like steamed crabs, make sure you stop by and get a dozen or so ears of corn from a Papa John's and try that recipe. Throw those corn ears right on top of the crabs in the steamer and load them up with crab spice. And, oh, my gosh, you'll enjoy it. A little butter and crab seasoning. Mm. Hey, if you enjoy your time outdoors with great taste and food, head to Schillinger's Papa John's Farm right there in Severn, Maryland. At their enormous produce barn, they have their own tasty, super sweet corn and homegrown tomatoes. They're ready to go. There's squash, there's zucchini, peppers, onions, green beans, cucumbers, fruits, and those mouth-watering cantaloupes and sweet, sweet, juicy, succulent watermelons as well. Papa John's Farm, located off I-97, that's right, exit 12, 8065 New Cut Road in Severn. That phone number, 410-969-8810. Papa John's is open every day. That phone number to order your corn if you're having a family reunion, a church picnic, or whatever, 410-969-8810. Visit Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner from Bay Linex of Glen Burnie or Catonsville Linex. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, new location, 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Hey, I stopped at Clyde's Sport Shop the other day. I'll tell you what, if you need it for crabbing, and the crabs are coming on strong, prices are falling, there's lots of crabs out there. They've got crab traps anywhere from $6.99 a piece or $69.95 a dozen, all the way up. The open-top crabs, the blue claws, they've got trot lines and supplies, all the bait you need for crabbing and fishing as well. Of course, they have baskets with lids. They have all the measures and tongs and gloves and mallets, crab bait, salted eel, chicken necks, even razor clams when they're available. They have the aluminum steamers if you need them, and even their own brand of crab spice. You name it, they've got it for crabbing at Clyde Sport Shop. And don't forget, Bill was telling me some of the great fishing for striped bass above the Bay Bridge. He'll tell you right where it is and what they're using on the 24-hour fishing hotline. That's 247-FISH. That's 247-3474-247-FISH is that phone number, 410 in front of that, of course. And if you want to check out the complete line of fishing selection and crabbing supplies at Clyde Sport Shop, why not stop by? 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That phone number there is 410-242-6108. 410-242-6108. Website is ClydeSports.com. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, drive home with me, Sean Hannity, Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 here on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight or a Cajun queen, and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land. Big John.
Big John.
All right, that's enough of Big John.
Big John.
Big Bad John.
There you go. All right. All right, well, Stan, listen, I know you're listening out there. I didn't mean to infer that you didn't care about a deer, but, I mean, when you're in that 18-wheeler going 70 miles an hour up Route 70 and you hit one, there's not much you can do about it. You might call somebody. You might call the police. You might let somebody know that you hit one, but, you know, you just you're not going to slam on the brakes and go jackknife your tractor trailer just to avoid hitting one and potentially wipe out the whole line of traffic out there. But, you know, we know you. We got it. We get it. So what happened to the caller? Hit and run? Great. All right. Well, apparently I didn't strike enough of a nerve. So we got Terry McAuliffe and we got Mr. What was his name? Mr. Horner, Charlie Horner. There died from Vibrio down in Virginia. And we got Cecil the C6 Sea Serpent. So I guess we didn't inspire anybody this morning. But that's okay. Maybe next hour we'll do something. Let's see what happens. Did I tell you about Merrick Backcountry? That's right. It's dog food. Merrick Backcountry. And I did get my samples the other day. I'm getting ready to start mixing in. If you buy Merrick Backcountry, by the way, and you want to start feeding it to your animal, to your dog, what I recommend and what the recommendation is from the manager at the Petco here in Owings Mills is to start out with about 25%. Mix it, you know, 75-25, what you're feeding now, and 25% of the new food. And you do that for 3 or 4 days, and then you increase it to 50%. You do that for 3 or 4 days, and then you increase it to 75% for, again, another couple of days. And after about 2 or 3 weeks of getting your dog used to that, you can go, you know, all the way and switch them over to 100%. Merrick Backcountry, for dogs whose taste buds are still wild. We add chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat to grain-free, high-protein kibble. Made in the USA with no ingredients from China. Merrick Backcountry is the ancestral diet preferred by dogs who prefer the outdoors. Merrick Backcountry, they love the wild as much as you do. Well, there you go. Another hour of the Outdoors and Radio Show. In the can, so to speak. You'll be able to hear the podcast here in a week or so. Just go to the EllisOutdoors.com website. If you want to learn anything about me, it's EllisOutdoors.com. Click on the Outdoorsman Radio Show. You also see there that we produce, Ellis Outdoors produces the Maryland Hunting Quarterly and Maryland Loves Crabs. Look for Maryland Loves Crabs and the Quarterly at a store near you. Now get out, stay out, and stay safe.